Hi, this is Artie from Denver, Colorado, and you're listening to the Ivy Envy podcast, home of strong opinions, marginal analysis, internet muscle flexes, the occasional chicken interruption, and the always entertaining Rube Waddell stories. Go Cubs!
Hi, and thanks for downloading the 398th episode of the Ivy Envy podcast. On this episode, we're going to talk about the Cubs series loss to the Padres. We will look at what went wrong and what went right in the series. That will be the majority of the discussion on this episode, but the scary stats continue to roll in. We'll share a couple of those, and Andy will wrap things up with a Rube Waddell story. I'm one of your co-hosts. My name is Corey, and I am joined by the other two hosts of this podcast.
Hello, it's Andy.
And Kurt.
We do these recordings live every Sunday night and then either Wednesday or Thursday night, depending on when that midweek series ends. Unfortunately, Blab is not cooperating for us tonight. So we had a good number of people there to watch live and wasn't happening. But if you want to watch the live broadcast, it normally works fine. But you can watch through the Blab app. That's B-L-A-B. Or you can connect with us on there for notifications of when our broadcasts are. You can pay attention to our social media accounts, Facebook, ivmv.com/Facebook, or we are at ivmv on Twitter to get the notifications. And if Blab isn't working for you for whatever reason, but it is working for us, you can find the stream at ivmv.com/live. And speaking of live and using Blab, we have an announcement to make. It is a shared announcement, and that announcement is happening this upcoming Monday at 8 p.m. It is a shared announcement with Danny Rocket of the Sun Ranto podcast. No hints. I'm not giving any hints. But, I'm going cryptic tonight, and that's all I'm sharing. But you are going to want to hear this announcement. And, again, it's on Blab, 8 p.m. on Monday evening.
I've heard rumors to expect something about 9 months from now. So
right. Right. Well, I don't think that's giving anything away, though.
Some cheap wine and right. Some fling in Arizona.
So, guys, even when this team is 25-8, the Cubs, they have the best record in baseball. They have a 7-game lead in their division on May freaking 12th. But it's nice to know that even then, Cubs fans can still have meltdowns.
Well, I think it's kind of them just falling into a comfortable, old, well-worn path, you know, just a familiar rut. And, you know, we haven't had much to complain about so far. So right. I think they were almost just waiting for it and longing for it in a weird, twisted way.
So you think this, like, there's a lot of Cubs fans out there that are like, oh, this is the, you know, we were waiting for the other shoe to drop. Here it is.
Beginning of the meltdown.
Yep. They're not even waiting till May to have their swoon, or they're not waiting till June to have their swoon. They're having it in May.
Yeah. I hope that those fans, you know, screenshot their tweets so that you can remind them later that this was not the beginning of the end.
Right. I mean, okay, let's be honest though. Losing does hurt.
Yeah.
Hurts for fans, you know, hurts the team too. But honestly, this is kind of where I'm at with it. I think it's probably good for this team to have those experiences. I think we talked about, you know, obviously last year, it was good that the Cubs kind of experienced the full range of a season, you know, as far as like being really hot, being really cold, getting swept by a terrible team and getting no hit. I mean, they kind of experienced everything. And I think that that's important for a young team that's what's going to make them better in the long run, I think. And so I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing for this team to have the sour taste of losing in their mouths and you know, kind of, again, having experienced this year of needing to turn things around. But honestly, like, they didn't have a bad series. They had one bad inning in the day game on Wednesday, and they ran into a good pitcher that they didn't match up well against in the night game. That's basically what it came down to. And just a heads up, the Cubs don't match up particularly well with Liriano in this upcoming series. So don't freak out if there's another low offensive production game.
But people will. But
right.
Well, and keeping it in perspective too, they lost two games. I mean,
right,
two games, and for the first time this season, two in a row. So I saw
somebody tweeted today that the Cubs 25% of the Cubs losses came yesterday.
right, and although they lost two games in a row, they have not lost 2 days in a row yet. So we've still got that.
Still got that stat going for us.
But you know. It's 162 game season. They're 25-8. And so, I mean, if you're out there listening and you're freaking out, chill. Just drink an old style. Allow Wilbur the W flag to take a few days off and just chill out.
And here's the other sort of positive spin on it is that we got to see how good this team is when firing on all cylinders, when starting pitching's good, when bullpen's good, when offense is rolling. That's how good this team can be. It's silly to expect that for 162 games. So, yeah, we got to see them, you know, have a couple bad games when not all of the things are coming together. And, yeah, that's okay. I mean, it's we got a lot more season to go.
Right.
And like you said earlier, it did suck. I won't lie. Like, seeing those two losses in one day, that burned a little bit. But that's kind of all part of the deal.
Well, especially because games...
So they had the bases loaded in last night's game, and how many times have we seen them come through in that situation this season, and they just happened to not be able to make it happen last night once.
Right.
Yeah, that was rough.
Yeah. Well, okay. So let's get the negative stuff out of the way first. Should we tackle Jorge Soler first? On Twitter, it really seems like he's the whipping boy right now, you know, and I like Soler, so I was quick to defend him, and I feel like a lot of the numbers help defend him, but I'm curious what you guys think, so I want you guys to share your opinions first.
Well, the problem, one of the problems is you have to look at peripherals and sabermetric stats to defend him, and some people aren't going to do that. You know, so
well, but that, you don't have to dig real deep into them, though. I mean, you don't have to. I mean, I'm a very elementary person when it comes to advanced stats, and it doesn't.
Right. Well, I mean, sorry, I didn't mean to be like, yeah, right, yeah, definitely.
Well, no, I mean, I guess you have to be willing to look past a batting average.
That's what I'm saying. Is like, I mean, if people are just going to look at the batting average and OBP, then yeah, they're going to be, you know, clamoring for something to happen with them. I think he needs to, I don't know, I think he needs to play through it. And I think that he needs to get regular at bats. And that's the only problem I see with it is that I wish he could get more at bats than he's able to get currently, I guess.
Yeah. Right.
And so I know a lot of people are using that as their argument for why he should be perhaps going to AAA or something like that, but I don't necessarily think that's the right call. You know,
I mean, because I think he would have no problem in Iowa. He'd be
right.
He'd be tearing it up in Iowa, and then people would be like, "We need this guy back."
Right, right.
It's not. He's in a tough spot because he's a developing player. He's obviously not found his groove yet, and this is a team that's moved. Just in 1 year, went from everybody's young and developing to we don't have room for developing players to get regular at bats because somebody else better can take his spot.
Yeah.
So he's in a tough spot. Like, I don't hate on him because he's in a slump. But, you know, it's hard to keep him in there every day.
Yeah. And I mean, since we're on the topic of the Iowa thing, I mean, I'll get back to defending him. But as far as like what needs to happen from here, you know, I think one of you guys just said it, that, you know, he's going to go down and do just fine against AAA pitching. I don't think that's where he needs to work stuff out. And, you know, on top of just like, okay, is that what he needs to, you know, just as far as to get back on track or whatever, I don't think that sending players down is always the best thing to do, even if a guy is struggling. Because I think in a player's eyes, it has to be a demotion and they don't want to leave the team. They want to prove themselves at the major league level, and they're part of the personality of the team. And I feel like you're maybe kind of messing with team chemistry when you do things like that. And, you know, a player will go from the luxuries of a new clubhouse and traveling with the team and everything that goes along with that to then going to Iowa and playing in Albuquerque and Reno or wherever. And I think that sometimes the move is warranted, but I don't feel like that's the case with Soler right now when you look at some of the peripherals. And I just like to see him get consistent playing time at the major league level. But like you guys said, it's really hard when it's hard to give a platoon player, which is what he is. It's hard to give a platoon player like Soler consistent time when you have other platoon guys that are playing so well.
And you said it, Corey, that sometimes it's warranted. And I think it really comes down to, I mean, some players would be motivated by a demotion, right? It comes down to the manager or, you know, one of the, you know, the coaches, the coaching staff, knowing the player and what motivates the player. And some players that would probably work well for it to be like, oh, I need to, you know, give some urgency to their situation to be sent down. Whereas other players, it might not be effective motivation.
And don't be so short-sighted to forget that Javier Baez was pretty rough with an incredibly high strikeout rate last couple of years, and now he's one of the more dynamic players on this team just, you know, a short time later. And they're not the same player, but I think it's just a good example of players develop, players need time.
Well,
they need to see major league pitching, and
right.
we've already seen it, and now, like, we were, you know, let's not forget that and not give Soler the same sort of patience, even though, again, I admit that it's harder given the circumstances of the team.
Well, I think Baez, with his strikeout issues, he was going to benefit from going down and changing his approach. And we saw him do that. He is not the same player now that he was, 2 years ago when he came up with the end of 2014 or whatever. I mean, he's a vastly different person because he needed to, or player, not a, he's the same guy. He might be a different person. I don't know. But, like, you know, he had to go down and work on his approach. I don't know that Soler needs to necessarily do that. And so I engaged in an argument about Soler on Facebook last night. I shouldn't do that. I know, Kurt, you've scolded me today that
yeah,
I shouldn't go there. But okay, so I mean, there were comments made in this discussion. Here's some direct quotes. He has no patience at the plate, and he swings at everything in the dirt and above the numbers. There was also comments like send his ass down and even trade him for a bag of balls. One of my favorites was he's the new Castro, great guy that needs to start over somewhere else. So first off, he has less than a year of major league experience, and it's like, oh, he needs a change of scenery. That's so crazy.
And, hey, Iowa is pretty nice this time of year.
Right. I mean, it's just so nuts to like be, oh, he's the new Castro. No offense. If the person that's listening to the, I don't mean to make, you know, I don't mean to ridicule what you say. I think it's kind of ridiculous. So, and the idea of, you know, trading him for a bag of balls, what is it about Cubs fans that are obsessed with trading low? I do not understand. Anytime anybody like is on a cold streak,
knee-jerk reaction,
trade them. Who are you going to trade them for? If they're as bad as you think they are, what are you going to get in return? It's so nuts. Okay, but here's my response to that type of thinking, and you know, and I think a lot of Cubs fans have that right now. And I can understand if you look at some of the numbers, it's got to be frustrating. His numbers aren't great. He, you know, his slash line is 175, 261, 275. Not obviously nowhere near what it needs to be. I think the four strikeouts Thursday night, I think that's what kind of
in pretty key situations too.
Right. So that, I think that's
what that magnifies it.
Exactly. That's what stands out to people right now. And especially when the team is shut out And yeah, striking out, leaving guys on base. I get that. But in his in his previous 20 plate appearances before last night's game, going back to May 1st, he had 20 plate appearances and 3 strikeouts. So I guess just to address the idea that he's up there just swinging wildly at stuff out of the zone, his outside of the zone swinging percentage is 25%, meaning, you know, he swings at 25% of pitches that are outside of the zone. That's actually lower than average, which is 30%. His strikeout rate is about 10%, which falls into the above average range. So I'm sorry, I just don't see how you can be frustrated with Soler as a whole and
above average, meaning better.
Right. He's better than average. Right. Right. He is better than average when it comes to strikeouts. So I don't see how you can be frustrated with Soler as a whole and use those criticisms unless you're just looking at Thursday night. And if your sample size is Thursday night, then he is terrible. But, you know, yeah. But if you watch these games, you know that the strike zone, the strike zones have not been kind to, you know, for Soler, even going back to last season. And if anything, to me, it feels like he lets a lot of borderline pitches, specifically outside, he lets those pass and he's taking called strikes. And that's the opposite of him going up and swinging wildly. I think he has great, well, I don't want to say great. I think he has, for being a guy with less than a year of MLB experience, I think he has really good plate discipline. And if we're looking for explanations for his low batting average, and we've talked about this repeatedly on the podcast, but his BABIP is 209, meaning taking out strikeouts, walks, home runs, the balls that he puts in play, his batting average is 209 and or 211, I think. But that's a 150 point drop from his 361 last year. Now, the average is right around 300. So he's suffering from having poor luck and maybe a little less hard contact. Not much less hard contact, but his soft contact rate is not up. So I just kind of feel like those 4 strikeouts on Thursday night, I think they have everybody a little bit worked up, and I think he's kind of the easy target right now. And like we said, he's not getting consistent play time, especially with how well Baez and Listella have been playing. And I like Soler, and sure, I wish his batting average was higher, but I think there's some indications there that his approach is okay, and there might be a few tweaks that he can do. You know, I think that in a little better luck, and then everybody's happy.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, he's kind of had that trifecta of what you just described, and he's slumping a little bit. It's like when all those things fall into line that he looks really bad. But I think we're all in agreement, like, some time should heal these wounds, and he'll hit a clutch home run sometime in the near future, and everyone will forget.
Right. Yeah.
Well, most people will forget.
Yeah. I don't know. I kind of, you know, I guess early in the season, there hasn't been a lot of knee-jerk reactions, but you lose 2 games in a row, and all of a sudden everybody comes out of the woodwork. I think you guys probably saw on Twitter, I was listening to The Score after the game on Wednesday, the day game, the first game of the doubleheader, and one of the callers said that he was giving Jason Hayward a free pass until June 1st.
and then we're gonna send That's him to gracious. Iowa.
That is gracious.
Well, and you know, just to kind of further that the point of like when guys will come around for you, like what did Soler hit like 500 in the playoffs last year?
Right,
so,
right.
You know, I mean, it's all situational. It's all short term. You know, he's facing the best pitching in baseball in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
And he hit like 500. I don't know the exact numbers, but had a few home runs. And
so yeah, he performed.
We
really
all loved
well.
Him then,
right? Yeah, now he should be in Iowa.
Yep.
Not even with the Iowa Cubs. Just like I don't know.
I've got somewhere. I have an extra bedroom. He's welcome to stay here.
He needs to go to
what cheer Iowa.
He needs to spend a week in Fort Dodge.
Dyersville. Go to the Field of Dreams and rediscover the wonder and the love of the game.
Practice walking out of the cornfield.
Yeah, the corn's really low right now.
Yeah. Right. And Jorge's a big
dude.
You can
see all the ghosts. It's really crazy if you go there now. There's nowhere to hide for all the ghosts. Rube Waddell is out there in the corn.
He's giving him advice.
Shenanigans.
Okay, so let's continue this. Let's get all the bad stuff out of the way. Anything else bad about this series you guys want to talk about?
Well, I wanted to mention, because I heard some stupid talking heads on ESPN radio bringing up Lackey's "You Better Effing Run" to Christian Bethencourt in last night's game.
Mm-hmm.
Did you guys happen to see that?
I know it happened. I just
watched the video replay of it.
Yeah, I mean, Christian Bethencourt, it was like his third or fourth home run, I think, total in the big leagues. And he definitely like stopped and admired it before he really got into his home run chat. A trot. That's just a chat.
There was a bit of chatting, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, so there's some chatter on the part of Lackey who yelled at him. I mean, he yelled at him loudly, "You better effing run." And then later on, he was quoted after the game as saying, "I got a long memory." Lackey said, "He'll learn."
Horses do have long memories.
And faces. So I guess now they have some history. I don't know. Some of the stupid guys, you know, those national talking heads as far as sports are concerned, who know nothing about the Cubs and even baseball, latch on to stuff like this, you know, and talk about what a terrible guy Lackey is.
Well, I think when the Cubs signed Lackey, we knew we were going to get stuff like this. I mean, I don't really care that much about that. I guess my preference is that Lackey just kind of shuts his mouth and plays baseball. But I don't know. I mean, that's his competitive nature that probably allows him to be the pitcher that he is right now at the age of 37. So I don't know.
I think this is kind of one of those interesting just generational clashes of baseball, like the culture shift of baseball, where you got like a 38-year-old pitcher from Texas going against I don't know how old Bethencourt is, but let's assume he's not very old, young Latino player who we've noted like they're a little more flamboyant, and we've had our discussions about that. Like, and I'm not commenting on the like good or bad of either. I'm just saying that those two things are going to clash, and we're kind of seeing like the grandpas leave the game and the young guys coming in, and that's a new part of it. So we can leave the discussion for whether we like it or not for a different time. But yeah, there's going to be heads butting, and I hope Lackey doesn't do something stupid, because they've got four games left against the Padres, including the makeup that they've got to do for the postponement. And, you know, if he's out there in the third inning and beans him, he's probably going to get tossed. So that would be stupid.
Yeah. On the one hand, I do like that Lackey shows a lot of fire and competitive spirit, and he just seems to desire to win. And that's manifested sometimes in these kind of, I don't know, dubious ways. I just, like you said, Kurt, I just hope he doesn't do something stupid. Yeah, I mean, feel free to show some fire and be edgy. And that's kind of his identity. I don't expect him to deviate from his identity and who he is as a competitor, but just, you know, try to hold on to the reins a little bit.
Well, and, you know, Lackey's the perfect definition of the guy that you like on your team, but you hate when he's with a different team. So
right,
he's like the AJ Pierzynski of pitching.
Yeah, I just kind of feel like he something like that. I mean, I just don't see any point to it, really, you know. I think it's just a distraction, kind of, but I understand it's just a hot-headed reaction that he had. But you know, this is the kind of thing that, like,
that would kind of strike a nerve,
I guess, but I mean, who cares? You threw, yeah. You know, just yeah. Like, I don't know. I almost feel like I don't really care to see the Cubs. I don't care for them necessarily. Like, I would like to be on other teams' bad sides because we kick the crap out of them, not because we're yelling at them and stuff like that. And I say we. Gosh, dang it, I hate that.
Let's just embrace it, Corey.
No, I won't. I won't embrace it. But, I mean, like, I don't know. Like, what if the Cubs go, you know, what if they go out to San Diego and, like, Andrew Cashner, you know, throws a pitch at Chris Bryant? You know, like, why start this kind of stuff? Like, let's just kind of get through this season.
And why start it with not a good team?
Yeah. And why start it, like, I mean, I guess I could even see, like, if you kind of need something, like, if you need something like that to kind of rally the troops, but it just seemed unnecessary, and it just seemed like Lackey was just kind of being a hothead. But like, yeah. I said, that's what the Cubs got when they signed him, and we knew that situations like this would happen. He's not going to, you know, all of a sudden be some, like, cuddly guy. He's still going to be. Right. Yeah. I mean, he is what he is, so... I don't know. I just don't. At the same time, I don't think it's that big of a deal.
Yeah.
Like you said, Andy, I just hope it is left there in on both sides.
Yeah. All that being said, I've been really enjoying watching him pitch.
Yeah, me too.
Just the way he attacks batters. He's fun to watch pitch because he has such an intensity to him, and he's really going after the batter, and he never really gives them any quarter as far as I'm going to be around the strike zone, but everything I throw has a strategy to it. And you know, every once in a while, somebody's going to guess right, like on that homer.
Right.
But
I think the other thing that's impressive as an older guy with a lot of experience is that when he does give up that home run, he'll come right back at the next guy. Or, like, you know, you see a lot of younger pitchers who, they give up that mammoth shot, then they're a little bit flustered and they make bad pitches on the next at bat. But he doesn't seem to do that.
He will.
I mean, he will, sure. I think that's more of a...
I can think of one occasion.
Doesn't have his stuff versus, like, he doesn't... let me say this. He doesn't, like, lose his aggression.
Right.
He might not make the pitches, but he'll still come after you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, like, okay, if he's going to get hurt, he's going to keep getting hurt, you know?
Yeah, like... Game four. I don't know, whatever the game that we were at, where the Cubs clinched it against the Cardinals, and he gave up that hit up the middle to Hamill and was freaking out and everything, and then the next batter was Baez and he hit a home run. So,
well, that's when he played with a really terrible team. right. That's not now.
Okay. While we're on the topic of bad stuff, I feel like we should mention the bullpen. The bullpen has had a few rough games. In a win on Tuesday, Grimm really struggled in the eighth. You'll remember that the Cubs were up 8-3 and then gave up 4 in the eighth inning. Grimm issued a walk and then gave up 2 singles, and then Warren came in and gave up the grand slam. In Wednesday's afternoon game, it was really just that one inning that beat them. Hendricks was still pitching. I think it was the seventh. He gave up a single, and then Strope came in and threw a wild pitch, gave up 2 singles, gave up 2 walks, and then a home run. So I don't know. It's frustrating to see the bullpen have some rough outings, but, you know, this is a long season. And to be honest, the bullpen, like starters, have maybe overperformed a little bit so far this season. And so in no way do I think it's, like, cause for alarm for any of them. And I will say the one positive of the bullpen this, you know, in this series, I liked that Madden used Travis Wood as a loogie on Wednesday night. And I am much more comfortable with him coming in, getting one out and getting one out rather than sitting there for an entire inning. And I kind of talked about my apprehensive feelings about Travis Wood on our last episode, but
yeah. And they don't really need him to be the guy necessarily that can eat a bunch of innings, I guess.
Now that they have Warren.
Right.
Warren Cahill. Can be sort of that. Yeah. Warren Cahill can be that first guy in.
Yeah. While on the topic of bullpen too, guys, I have a Hector Rondon FIP update. It is now -0.15.
Hector Rondon FIP update.
Didn't we talk about how like Rondon had a terrible spring and
yeah,
hopefully he can maintain the closer spot, and do we need to do the closer by committee thing, all that stuff. So.
Well, and you know, I think that a lot of the bullpen has overperformed, mm-hmm. and I think we're going to see, I mean, this is what bullpens do. And you know, luckily on Tuesday night, they were able to hold on and still win 8-7. The offense, you know, kind of carried it for them. But and that's part of what happened in the last two games, is the offense really wasn't able to make up the difference late in the game, which we've seen them do so much. And you know, we've seen the Cubs pull away late in the game so much. Like, that's why I was really confident, you know, even late in those games, because it's like, okay, it'll be interesting to see how they do it, but I'm really confident that they're going to do it, and that just didn't happen. So,
yeah.
Can we move on to positive stuff?
Yeah.
All right. Let's make this thing positive. Even though I feel, you know, that there were negative things in this series, I still think there's a lot of reason for optimism and positivity from the series. And I want to start off by talking about the starters. And I feel like the starters did really well, especially Lackey, but all of them put the Cubs in a position to win. Lester went 6 innings, 4 hits, 3 runs, 1 walk, 4 strikeups. Hendricks went 6 2/3, gave up 6 hits, 3 runs, 2 of them earned, 1 walk and 8 strikeouts. And then Lackey had a great game, 8 innings pitched, 3 hits, 1 run. That was that 1 home run, no walks and 7 strikeouts. So they all looked good, and like I said, they all put the Cubs in a position to win. This morning I got an email from Luann who pointed out that all 5 Cubs starters are in the top 35 in baseball in WHIP.
So, wow.
You can't really fault the starting pitching in this series. I mean, you had 3 quality starts. So
yeah, it's been good. And
I mean, you lose every game, you score 0 runs. So.
Yeah,
that is a stupid cliche for you.
Is that your stat of the week?
Yeah, even though I'm not giving one, but yeah, that could be one.
Yes, I mean, so the rotation has looked good. I wanted to mention Ben Zobrist too. He's been great lately. In Tuesday's game, he was 4 for 4 with 3 runs and 2 runs driven in. He was named the National League Player of the Week for last week. Since let's see, April 17th, his batting average was .214, and his OBP was .333. Since then, he's raised it to batting average .309 and on base percentage .432. So he's been great for about a month now.
Yeah, in May, it was 11 days into May, he was hitting .405, .500, .751. So,
wow.
Yeah. And then seeing him sort of come after Rizzo, and like Rizzo's kind of been a little bit hotter lately. And that other guys have been good too. Brian's been good. And so, like, that sort of 3-man combination has been nice, because there's really no way around it. So people have to pitch to him. And I think he's probably benefiting from some of that.
The lineup is a nightmare. I just remember people talking about how the Cubs walked Bryce Harper 3 times intentionally and 6 times total. In that last game they played against the Nationals, I think it was.
Right.
And you know, there were several articles floating around about how, or at least tweets or whatever, about how you just can't do that with the Cubs lineup because it's so well constructed. And so Maddon saw a flaw with the Nationals lineup and he exploited it, and people tried to talk trash about it, but it was a very effective strategy that you just can't use anything like it against the Cubs lineup.
No. Yeah. And you know, it is as much of a nightmare as this lineup is for the opposing teams, they're still going to have series like they just had. They're still going to have games like they had, you know, on Wednesday night. Those are going to happen. It's inevitable. It doesn't matter how good of a team it is. They're still going to have games where they get shut out and where they can't get clicking. And that's where I kind of feel like having a day off today is probably good for the team. And especially that they don't have to travel. The pirates are coming in. I think, I guess it's just going to happen, and it's going to happen again this season. And they're probably going to have a losing streak at some point. And that doesn't mean that this team is not really freaking good.
Yeah. It's a great point. And people, it's amazing how quickly people lose sight of that. But, you know, I guess we're here to tell and encourage people and then maybe even admonish people not to lose sight of that.
Yeah. And of course we're a couple, what are we, we're a day removed from the two losses. So maybe we've come down and we're not expressing the frustration we may have yesterday. So we're not immune to it either, but,
well, it's just important.
Is the long-term perspective.
Right. And it's like, I mean, I kind of got frustrated after the Wednesday night game, you know, when they lost 1-0. And it's just like, man, how they should have, you know, just felt like they should have been able to put something together. And all you had to do was look at, like, 25-8. I can't complain about that. You know, if you would have told me it, you know, at the beginning of the season that they'll start off 25-8, I don't care if two of those losses came in a row. I don't care anything. That's, you know, and it's not like I almost kind of feel like when we talked about this maybe at the top of the episode, but like I almost kind of feel like maybe there's some people out there that are kind of like, oh, so that this is now the real Cubs, like now, right. You know, and not what we've seen over the last month to or 5 weeks. That's been kind of a fluke. You know, they've just been like playing crazy out of their minds. Now this is what we can expect, or, you know, it's that like safe place, I guess, for Cubs fans, like the doom and gloom and everything. But
well, in long term, I think we said this too, this could be a good thing for a lot of reasons, but maybe one is to sort of shake the attention, like, all right, okay, we lost a couple games, now you can stop spending every Sports Center, you know,
sure,
baseball clip on us, and maybe we can just play some baseball and be normal again. I don't think it's probably going to happen, but
yeah,
maybe it does.
Yeah, and I almost hate, you know, if you look at it from the team's perspective, I hate to say this because I think it's probably wrong, but I think winning has been so easy for this team that and things have just happened. I don't want to say easy because obviously these guys are working hard, you know, like they've accomplished a lot, but it, you know, I think maybe something like this might kind of help them stay focused. And not that they're unfocused. I guess I just mean that, like I said, it's a stupid thing to say because it's probably not true, but, the losses, I don't think are a bad thing for the team.
Well, I can tell you, I don't think they dwell on it because, after Zobrist made the last out and Rodney did his shoot the arrow,
that was awesome.
Zobrist jumped up, to try to intercept it. So, you know, mere seconds after the final out, I think he had already moved on. So,
well,
I can guarantee you they're not dwelling on this as much as we are.
No, and this is absolutely bonkers. This is crazy. Can you, I mean, let's just stop and like put this into perspective for a second. They won 8 in a row. Like they have gone 8-2 in their last 10 right. games.
And so if they'd gone what, 3-1, 3-1, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
Well, who knows? Maybe we would. That's a funny thing is that's how amazing this season has been that like in the previous 7 seasons of us podcasting on the Cubs, an 8-2 week or 8-2 stretch in 10 games would have had us like over the moon. We would have been so excited. And it's just, it's so funny that like, and I don't think that the three of us are, you know, depressed about the Cubs losing 2 games in a row. But I think about that. Like, people have lost their minds over 2 losses in a row. That is so crazy. Okay. I feel like we can move on. Do you guys?
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's move on.
We're kind of belaboring the point, I guess. Okay. So Miguel Montero, he is rehabbing in Iowa. So, Kurt, when can we maybe expect Montero to join the team?
It's hard to say exactly, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, but I haven't seen any dates about when he'll return, but he's played 3 games with Iowa, including today. So it doesn't, like I said, I don't see any dates of when he's going to return, but it shouldn't take him long. He's had 3 games. It would make sense to me that he would come back sometime this weekend, but maybe he stays down there for this Pirate series and comes back Monday on the off day. and then travels to Milwaukee next week. So it's hard to say exactly. I don't think there's any real rush, but he'll be back pretty soon.
Right.
And I heard it suggested that it could be as early as this weekend versus the Pirates as well. Yeah. So you're
and
right.
There must have been a reason for him to stay and play today, because he did, with today being off day, it would have made sense for him to come back today and maybe be there for the Pirates series, even if he doesn't start tomorrow.
Right.
But that didn't happen. So maybe he comes back and kind of hangs out tomorrow, Saturday, who knows? And then.
Well, and today was an early game for Iowa, I believe. I think it was like a noon game. So who knows? I mean, maybe he's headed to Chicago.
Could be. Yeah.
I don't think that, I don't think that like the Cubs desperately need him there to face the Pirates, but it will be nice to have him back. So I hope that he does rejoin the team this weekend.
Yeah, and let's give a little cred to Tim Fedorowicz, for holding his own in a short stint.
Yeah. So we mentioned that the Cubs have a weekend series at Wrigley with the Pirates. So how do the pitching matchups look, Andy?
Yeah, well, we've already kind of alluded to the first pitcher that the Cubs will be facing in Liriano on Friday. And Kurt's talked a little bit, too, about just how, as a lefty, he has that really effective changeup against the righties. And he's done well against the Cubs. They didn't have to face him in the first season. They faced the Pirates this season. So this will be their first look at him this year. And in his last three starts, he's been pretty good. He's 2-0 with a 3.20 ERA and 22 strikeouts in those last three starts. He goes against Lackey, though, on Friday, who looked really strong in the game on Wednesday. So that'll be an interesting matchup. And maybe it will take, a lefty hitting a lefty like Rizzo, breaking through against Liriano or something like that to sort of open the floodgates against him. They face Locke on Saturday. And the Cubs have a history of really just jumping all over Locke. Like last season against the Cubs, he had four starts against them and he had an 8.31 ERA and four starts at Wrigley Field. So the Cubs have been able to hit him, and he goes against Arrieta. So that game looks pretty winnable on Saturday.
Can I go back? Can I jump back to Friday real quick?
Yeah.
He faces Hamill, right?
Right. Yeah. I forgot to mention that he
Liriano
faces Hamill.
Does. Yeah. Okay.
And finally, to finish out the series on Sunday, this actually is a pretty cool matchup. I think you have Garrett Cole going against John Lester. And so Cole, we actually saw get out-dueled by Hamill last time in the last series. Cole has been better since that outing against the Cubs. So it'll be interesting to see how he does against, facing off against John Lester on Sunday at Wrigley.
Yeah. So if you're going to any of these Pirates games or really any other games at Wrigley this season, get your parking figured out ahead of time. You can use the ParkWiz widget on the side of our website. It's kind of like Airbnb for your car. So get it all lined up ahead of time. It's convenient, cheaper than paying for parking once you get up there and everything. So again, go to ivmv.com and click on that ParkWiz widget on the side of the page. All right. So we don't have any official scary stats, but there are a few things that I want to share that I've kind of come across and been thinking about lately. The first one is, the Cubs have pretty clearly dismantled their opponents this season. And it seems like in several series, the Cubs have kind of blown up the other team's bullpen, usually in the first or second game of the series, which is really nice. Getting into the bullpen, that's a priority for the Cubs. And when you look at their lineup against relief pitching, specifically weaker relief pitching, that lineup can do a ton of damage. And so we've seen them score a lot late in the games. But I was kind of curious about the lasting effect of that series against the Cubs and what effect it has on the teams after they wrap up their series with the Cubs. And I think that you could probably make the case that bullpens are overused and battered leaving a series with the Cubs. That's kind of a generalization, but you know, I was wondering how that would impact them in the following series. I didn't have time to look specifically at how the bullpens performed, like how those bullpens performed in the following series, but I did look at how the teams performed. So let's leave off with the Pirates series. So before this Nationals series. So in those nine series that followed an opponent's series with the Cubs, there were 2 series wins, 6 series losses, and 1 tie. And so following a series with the Cubs, the opponents are 11-17. It's not huge, you know, and you know, that is kind of a small sample and everything, but I think that that's something like a trend that we might see throughout the year, especially if the Cubs are able to continue to drive up pitch counts and really kind of, I mean, there were a couple series, and I wish I could remember specifically, but I remember like in the first game of a series with the Cubs, they were able to just like dismantle the bullpen in that very first game. And it has a huge impact on the following 2 games. So I don't know. It's just something I think it might be worth keeping an eye on.
Well, I think it's an interesting stat given that at least 2 of these teams were, you know, 2 of the better teams in the National League too. So,
right.
Like they were kind of, both of those teams were fairly hot coming into the series versus the Cubs, kind of got it handed to them against the Cubs. And then,
yeah,
that was a result.
Right. Yeah. Here's another one. So if this one's looking at run differential, and if the Braves, okay, so we're 5 weeks into the season, almost 6 weeks in, if the Braves did not allow their opponents to score at all this season, if the Braves threw a shutout every single game so far this season, the Cubs would still have a better run differential.
Dang.
I'm not sure my brain is wrapping around that stat, but
it's not okay. Well, it's not completely true because the 2 teams have played, but let's pretend that they haven't. Okay. So basically the Braves have scored 97 runs this season. So if they did not allow their opponents to score at all this entire 6 weeks, they would have a run differential of 97 plus 97. The Cubs have scored 99 runs more than their opponents. So yeah, almost 6 weeks into the season, the Cubs have beaten their opponents by more runs than the Braves have even scored.
Wow.
Dang.
I thought they that suck. Was... Yeah, yeah. okay, one more here. This one was... it's from Rock. He sent it to me Wednesday morning before the doubleheader, and he says, okay, this isn't realistic, but an interesting math problem. If the Cubs were to maintain their current winning percentage at 805... and the Pirates continued theirs at 531, the Cubs would mathematically clinch the division on August 23rd, game 127.
Oh, man.
And he said they would clinch a playoff berth a good deal before that. So he points out that the 98 Yankees were the earliest to clinch a playoff spot on August 29th. So he kind of wonders if maybe, you know, the Cubs could set a record, but really, I mean, I don't think they're going to clinch on August 23rd or before that, but you know, I think maybe like some Cubs fans need to be reminded here as we wrap this episode up, like just how dominating this team is and the run differential, look at that. And this, you know, the fact that they are, could, I mean, they really could like lock things up pretty early. I mean, maybe not exactly clinch a playoff spot, but they're going to could potentially be in really good position very early. So, you know, these 2 losses in a row, this is nothing. So, yes. So Andy, do you want to share a Rube Waddell story? And for anybody listening new or just kind of like came in and wonders why the heck we tell these Rube Waddell stories, just give like a 10-second, like who the heck is Rube Waddell?
Yeah, Rube Waddell was a pitcher at the turn of the 20th century in the early 1900s. And he is known for being an excellent pitcher on par with Cy Young, but also pretty eccentric, pretty weird, and also not very intelligent as well. So a lot of idiosyncrasies. Now, a lot of my information is coming from William Anderson's site, which is RubelBuddleBaseball.com. And so here's the story for today. At some point on a trip out west when he was playing for Columbus, Rube got a couple guns, a couple six shooters, and got fascinated with just the old west and cowboys. And so it was reported, according to Anderson, that Rube insisted upon donning a cowpuncher outfit, chaps, spurs, pink silk shirt, and boots. So when he wasn't playing, he would wear this like full cowboy outfit. And so at one point, he was, before a game, he was practicing firing his pistols into a wall, and some of the bullets were going through, basically, and coming near the acting manager of the Columbus club, whose name was George Thibault. and so, let me quote the article here. It says, Rube was, just before the latest battle at Columbus, practicing shooting a revolver out back at the clubhouse. Some of the bullets punctured the planks and filtered through to where Thibault was dressing, and he entered objections. The quarrel grew high, and finally Thibault sailed into the pitcher. There was a merry battle, and in the end, Thibault looked like a man who has been run over by a harrow, which is like a, which is like a tiller, like it's some sort of agricultural machine. And so they actually got in a fight over Rube firing his gun into the wall and the bullets coming near him in the clubhouse, and then Rube apparently beat the crap out of him.
Rube could not understand why someone would be upset over almost being shot. Kick the crap out of him.
Oh, Rube. I'm trying to picture what somebody looks like after like being torn up by a tiller. Oh man. And then he probably went out and pitched a shutout.
He did. He went out and won the next two games after that.
And he celebrated by firing his guns into the air. Oh man. I love these stories. I hope they never end.
Oh, they'll have to end at some point. I'll just kind of forget which I've talked about and which I haven't.
Right. Well, we can always repeat. Oh man. All right, so that does it for this episode. It was brought to you by all of our Patreon supporters. If you like what we do here, go to patreon.com/IVMB. I am all caught up with perks. I got them all sent out yesterday. So if you don't get yours by the end of the week, if you've never gotten yours, reach out to me because I somehow missed you. So yeah, if you have jumped on the Patreon campaign lately, you'll get your stickers, posters, pint glasses, all that in the mail soon. To check out all of the perks that we have available and to help us produce this podcast and make equipment upgrades and help us fund some of our live events, you can go to patreon.com/IVMV, or you can go to IVMV.com, and on the right-hand side of the page, there's a little Patreon advertisement there. So thank you for listening. We'll be back on Sunday to talk about this series with the Pirates. And until then, go Cubs.
Hey, guys, it's Matthew from Justice. So it's Thursday morning. I'm on my way home from work, and the sports radio score is still on when I turn on my car and get ready to go home. And they've got some knucklehead talking about he wants to send Soler down to AAA or send him down. And I just had to turn the radio off. I hate sports casts, radio. Talk to you later, guys. Have a good one.
Hey, guys. It's Matt from Des Moines, Iowa. And I do have a message for Cubs fans who are freaking out after the doubleheader loss. I think a lot of that negative energy comes from the fact that Cubs fans, in general, have prided themselves on their skepticism. So over the many years in which the Cubs have been non-competitive, it has been a relief as a fan to feel like you're smarter than the general manager, you're smarter than the president, you're smarter than the players or whoever, So you always got to be detached, and you didn't really have to fully feel how bad the team was, because you thought to yourself, yeah, they're bad, but if only they would listen to me, they could be better. So now that the team is actually good, those people who only understand their Cubs fandom through the lens of skepticism and negativity aren't able to actually handle the prospect of optimism. So as soon as something, anything goes wrong, they revert to all of their most negative tendencies so they can feel safe again. Because optimism is dangerous because it opens yourself up to disappointment. But if you're cynical and skeptical about everything, and if you're confident that everything would go better if they did it the way that you thought it should go, then you're safe and you don't actually have to feel hope and you don't have to feel disappointment when things fall apart. So, in sum, I would say that if you're a skeptical Cubs fan who's feeling furious after the doubleheader loss, open yourself up to hope. Yeah, sometimes it can hurt in the end, but sometimes you can feel more if you're open than if you keep your heart closed. Thanks, guys.
This is Adam from Hanson, Virginia. And for everybody who's freaking out over the Cubs losses, I got six words for you. Jim Riggleman, Dusty Baker, and Joe Matt. Gonna be okay. Go Cubs.
Hi, this is Lauren from Cincinnati. In response to what I'd like to tell Cubs fans who are freaking out about yesterday's losses, before we storm Wrigley with plastic pitchforks and torches, let's all take a minute to breathe and remember that we're 25-8. And every salty Cardinals fan who's asking about flying the L flag and where are we, just remember it's really hard to hear those salty people from 7.5 games back. It's a long season. It's early May. And clearly, if this is where we are struggling and we are 25-8, that struggle, I'm happy that struggle is real. Thanks, guys. Go Cubs, go.